This is the Athletic Hockey Show Prospect Series.
Hey everybody, Max Boltman here alongside Corey Pronman and Flow Hockey's Chris Peters for another episode of the Athletic Hockey Show Prospect Series. And Chris, there is a new king of college hockey. Denver wins the national title, their 10th national title as a program, the most of any program in college hockey. They shut out a high-flying Boston College team to do it. How'd they get there?
That is a great question, Max. And not only are they the kings of college hockey, they're the kings of kings with their 10th national title, as you mentioned, the record now set. And obviously, that was a motivating factor for this team. I think every single guy mentioned it about how important it was to them to get to that. But how they got there was this was with a team that they defended incredibly well as a team, which is not something earlier in the season that you could say they did consistently. They certainly had plenty of good defenders and guys that had mobility and they could win possession, and they obviously outscored most teams that they played. But I think earlier in the season, they were a team that outscored their problems. Now they were a team in the playoffs, and that was consistent throughout even the NCHC tournament and into the national tournament. They basically became a team that made it very difficult to score against. And then they also had Matt Davis, who made 23 saves in the third period of that championship game, including that, you know, basically all-time great NCAA save on Ryan Leonard, where he dove across and stopped the puck. And they only allowed 3 goals over the course of the entire tournament. They had 1 goal against in each of their NCAA tournament games. That's a credit to Davis, but it's also a credit to the team that played with tremendous possession. They played with discipline. They were difficult to get through, difficult to get to the interior, a lot of shots from the perimeter against them, and they were able to eat that up. So I think it was a very well-coached team, a team that peaked at the right time, a team that got a goalie that's played out of his mind, and then a team that also won with depth because they did not rely on stars for their scoring. Goals came from everywhere in their lineup, and that's another thing that, you know, I think was probably the biggest separating factor, is that they had the depth, and that really trumped the other teams that had bigger stars. And BC had it, BU had it, didn't matter. And I thought it would matter. It didn't, because of how deep Denver was.
I agree with everything that Chris said right there, but I would disagree that they didn't have a star, because from what I saw in the hardest games of the season, I thought Zeke Boyum looked like a star. I thought that guy is one of the best draft eligibles I've seen in college. He was, I thought, impactful. I mean, just you saw that, like, the second on the second goal, the assist he made on that play for a draft eligible defenseman. It's, you know, just a really special player, special season he had. You know, we've talked about him a bunch on the podcast lately, but I feel like it just can't be overstated how good he was this season. You know, ends the year with 50 points on the season. Now, mind you, with all those extra games to the national championship, but just to put that in context, remember, you know, all the way back in 2019, how much people were, you know, just praising Cale Makar for just how dominant a college player he was. He was 2 years removed from his draft at that point, and he had 49 points on that season. Like, for Zeke to do what he did this year is really unprecedented in modern times. And he was a really dynamic player consistently with his skating, his skill, his playmaking. And he looks like a guy who I think has a chance to become a star in the National Hockey League.
Chris, you mentioned well-coached when you were describing Denver, and I want to let Denver have as much time to enjoy this in pure bliss as possible, but I don't know how much longer we can avoid the topic of David Carl and his potential NHL prospects. This is a guy who, in the last 2 calendar years now, maybe give or take a few days on the back end, has 2 national championships and a World Junior gold medal, and that's not the kind of thing that goes unnoticed in NHL circles.
No, it doesn't. And I don't think it has. I mean, I think that if you talk about the hottest coaching prospects in hockey right now, I think David Carl would be at the top of that list. And, you know, there are a couple of coaches in college hockey that have certainly gotten interest from NHL teams in the past, that, you know, either haven't taken it or didn't quite get across the finish line with some of those. But I think the thing about David Carl is he is at the point now where he's got two national championships. He's 34 years old. He has a world junior gold medal. He's at the point now where he's basically, I don't think he's going to jump at the first job that becomes available. I think he's going to be patient. He's going to wait for the right job, the right opportunity, the place where he feels like he can have success. I think he's comfortable at Denver. I think that he was motivated by getting a 10th national championship for the program. And let's recall that David Carl, his playing career was cut short by a heart condition. He ended up staying at Denver. They honored his scholarship. He stayed there. He worked as a student manager, then as a student coach, then got his first job with Derek Lalonde at the Green Bay Gamblers. So this is a guy that has climbed the ladder from the time basically he was 18 years old, which is really impressive. He is one of the more impressive individuals to be around as well. He's a stoic. He is a guy that doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. He doesn't get too animated behind the bench. The players seem to, that seems to resonate with the players. You look at how he did at the World Juniors, look at what he did with Denver. He pushes a lot of the right buttons. He lets players play the way that that maximizes their skill set, but also makes sure that everybody's responsible. I think that he, as of right now, as we're recording this, the Buffalo Sabres job just came open. Maybe they'll give him a call, maybe they won't. But I think that David Carl is going to be picky about where he goes, and he's also earned that right. What he's built at Denver. He may, lose a number of players from this current team, but that really hasn't seemed to matter. They've lost plenty of players in the past and still had competitive teams. So two national championships in the last 3 years, 34 years old, world junior gold. I believe if he's available, I'm pretty sure he'll be Team USA's coach for the next world juniors as well. So, this is a guy that really has the sky as the limit for his coaching career at this point.
Corey, Boston College is now, in the wake of this loss, going to have some fallout here. Cutter Gauthier signs with the Anaheim Ducks, but there's some other big decisions out there on the horizon. For all we know, they're going to be made by the time people are listening to this. But what are the biggest decisions you're watching here? Obviously, Ryan Leonard's in there, Will Smith. Who's got the best argument to stay, and who's got the best argument to leave here?
I think those are really tough decisions to make, because I think when we watch that trio up until midseason, whether it was the first half of the year where they were playing well, but they weren't putting up huge numbers. And then other than Gabe Perreault at the time, and then to go to the World Juniors, I thought they were pretty good. They were dominant. I think the common train of thought was, let's have, they're really good players, high-end prospects, but they need to come back for a second year. Then the second half comes and those three just light up college hockey, and it went throughout the conference play. And, just one of the most dominant, consistent lines we've seen in the modern era, especially for all being freshmen. And I think now they all have really tough decisions to make. And I think the decisions that one or two of them makes will affect the other ones. I would be really surprised if, say, Smith and Leonard signed and then Perreault goes back for a second season at Boston College. So I think, we'll see. I think if you really evaluated the playoffs, in the end of season play, I thought Ryan Leonard looked like he was the most ready to play in the NHL. And there's a situation potentially brewing if the Capitals make the playoffs, or he could even potentially join the roster. So I think that's the most interesting one. If the Capitals don't make the playoffs, then there might be some patience and maybe some collaboration among the players. I always tend to lean towards 2 years is more ideal, but in the case of these guys where Smith already led the nation in scoring, Leonard looks so dominant already as a freshman. If I was advising them, I probably would tell those two they're probably ready to turn pro. Perreault is probably the toughest decision, because like I said, it's going to be really tough if he goes back to Boston College and those guys aren't there, but I'm not quite sure he's ready to play in the NHL just quite yet.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. And Gabe Perreault had a tremendous season. You look at the production and everything else. Also, BC does have James Higgins coming in next year. That would be, potentially a guy that would, replace Will Smith if he does go. I think Will Smith's decision is largely, considering, okay, where are the Sharks going to be next year? What environment am I going to be in? Even Macklin Celebrini, in the great piece that Joe Smith wrote for you guys at The Athletic, said, it depends on who picks me if I'm going to come out. Because I think situation is very important. And you think about the way that these players have dictated their developmental futures over the last couple of years in college hockey, they hold a fair amount of power. And also the introduction of NIL and different things like that has really softened the blow. We just saw Rucker McGroarty decided to return to Michigan, even though all of, you know, his classmates essentially are leaving, with Frank Naser and also Gavin Brindley signing right away. And then Rucker chooses not to. And that's a situational thing, because the Winnipeg Jets really don't have a place for him to play in the near future. Obviously, the Sharks have a place for Will Smith. Capitals seem to have a place for Ryan Leonard. The Rangers definitely don't for Gabe Perreault, not even next year, where it's just, I don't think that's going to be, you know, physically and developmentally, I don't think he's ready for that step. But yeah, but I mean, I think that these players have more power than they've ever had in terms of deciding whether or not to stay or go. And as we've seen, many players have chosen to take that second year. But there have been a few one and dones this year as well, Bradley Nadeau and a few others. So plenty to discuss about them. I think, you know, basically if all three of them go back, if you know, two of them turn pro, you know, I don't think that there's really a wrong answer for them.
I think really tough decisions for those guys and for Boyum and for Artie Lashunov. I think I don't really know where all those decisions are going to go, because I think they're all borderline cases.
For sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Corey, right before the break there, you mentioned Artem Lovshunov and Zeev Boyum and the decisions that they also are going to have to make here. You've got a new draft board coming out soon. I imagine after the two college seasons those two guys just had, they are going to be pretty high on that list.
Yeah, I think Lovshunov and Boyum are both top five players in this draft right now. I don't think those are controversial statements. I mean, you look at, I just talked about Boyum on the past segment, but even like Lovshunov with his size, mobility, the skill. I know that the profiles are not identical, but he's a late birth date in the Big Ten. When you look at the last two late birth date draft eligibles in the Big Ten, those being Quinn Hughes and Owen Power. I'm not sure, like, you know, you can argue who's the better pro prospect, but he had better seasons as a draft eligible than those two did. You know, he was, you know, the clear, you know, best defenseman in his conference, the, you know, the top player on a one seed, even though a Michigan State's tournament ended before they were hoping for. I mean, I think this guy is a, you know, extremely talented offensive player with great athleticism. And yeah, like I said, it was kind of just a really special season. I think we're getting kind of, maybe I had an NHL person reach out to me the other day and say, you know, maybe we're getting a little spoiled right now. You know, we look at how good Lovshunov was this year, how good Boyum was this year, how good Celebrini was this year, how good Fantilli was last season. Like, that's not the norm in college hockey for guys to come in and even as really good draft eligibles to dominate. Like, Owen Power didn't dominate. Matt Beniers didn't dominate. Kent Johnson didn't dominate. Quinn Hughes didn't dominate. You know, this is kind of a very recent trend at the moment.
Chris, you had Lovshunov, I think, as high as number two on your most recent board. in such a cluster D class, like where did he kind of separate himself for you? I mean, I'm not to say there's a huge separation, but to get that nudge at number two.
Yeah, it's not a huge separation. I just, to me, of all the defensemen that we watch this season, the thing that separates Levshinov from me is that he makes it look easy. Everything he does looks easy. There's his skating stride. I don't know, you know, on the assist that he had on that late goal, or was it the overtime goal, Corey? I can't remember, where he got around the defender. It didn't even look like he was chugging. He was just going at his normal skating stride and created separation. And it, you know, he almost plays the game like it's like he's in a rocking chair. He's very confident and poised with the puck. He makes good decisions with the puck. He defends confidently. He engages physically, probably could do it even a little bit more. And you know, I just felt like, to me, of all the defensemen in this class, he was the most complete. He had the fewest concerns for me. Like, I don't really think a lot of these guys, like, they don't have glaring concerns. You see the tremendous skill level, the ability to move pucks, the size of some of these guys, the athleticism of this class in general. You know, the difference for me was that I thought that Artie, at his age, at you know, coming from the USHL, being as dominant as he was, the transitions that he's made year over year from coming from Belarus to going to the USHL to going to college, we've seen a real through line in his progression, and that he's just been consistent, steady. You know what you're going to get. And to me, there's a level of predictability that I feel I have with him that I might not have with some of the other defensemen. But boy, he is absolute joy to watch. And to Corey's point, I mean, we forget how incredible a 35 points in 38 games is for a draft eligible defenseman in college hockey. Because I mean, you think about other guys that were in that range. I mean, like guys that were already drafted, Zach Werenski, you know, different players like that. You know, they had big seasons, but what Levshinov did this year at his age and based on his experience, to me, was really truly exceptional while playing, you know, major minutes for a resurgent team. I mean, without him, I don't think Michigan State is as good as they were this season.
Yeah, but I agree with you on Levshinov in that I think he was the cleanest evaluation of the top prospects. Yeah. I think there are some people in the league who have issues with his defensive play. I don't think it's an issue. Again, he's a draft eligible in college. I think there's going to be some playing big minutes. There's going to be some defensive mishaps here or there. He's physical. He killed penalties on a good team, played big minutes. Like, I'm not really concerned about his defensive play. Whereas you look at the other top prospects with, like, say, Ziv Boyum or Zane Parekh, I think there's going to be some minor concerns on how well they're going to defend as a pro. Salayev and Sam Dickinson, I think there's going to be minor concerns on how much offense they're going to have as a pro. I think Carter Yakimchuk, his hockey sense can look a little average at times. But I think with Levshinov, it was just the cleanest evaluation. You know, he ticks all the boxes, had a great year, great development track. You know, Chris mentioned the year-over-year development. It kind of reminds me, quite frankly, of Andrei Sveshnikov's development, different positions, but going from, you know, going overseas to the USHL to playing really high level, going second overall. It wouldn't surprise me if that ends up being Levshinov's trajectory and he is in the NHL next season.
So for both Levshinov and Boyum, we've seen their closing statement, so to speak, for the NHL draft. For a lot of these guys, though, it's going to be at the World U18 Championships. Notably not in that category are two guys who I think we would have really liked to see on this stage, Berkeley Catton and Caden Lindstrom. Corey, you had a report recently that they are going to be shut down with injuries.
Yeah, and Catton is... You know, it seems like he has had a nagging hip injury, but he, you know, he played through it for most of the year and had a great season. Lindstrom's going to be a point of debate, I think, going forward, because there are some people in the league who adore this player, who see 6'3 and could fly, and he's physical, and he scores a lot of goals, and, you know, seems to be a really talented player. And there are people in the league who still view this guy as a top five pick, guy who think they can be of this foundational piece they can build around. And there are others who do have concerns on a player who's had multiple injury concerns in his draft year, who didn't quite have the runway the other top prospects have to prove that he could score at the same level over the same period of time. You know, you can look at like Lindstrom's stats and see that his shooting percentage was pretty high in the first half with that ever progressed. You know, who can know with time? You know, didn't always seem like he was going to be this elite scorer, you know, up until October, essentially. But so I think, you know, it really depends what side of the fence you're on. Like, if you like love this player, you think he could be the next, you know, Dylan Larkin or something like that. And if you don't love this player, you're thinking of like Lawson Krause, you know, both who are, by the way, long-term, you know, NHL players. Those are not the worst case scenario. Could be a lot worse than that. But I think where Lindstrom goes in the draft, the homework teams are going to have to do on him in particular is going to be a real intense point of discussion over the next few months.
Yeah. And to Corey's point too, it's not just the injuries, it's how he plays the game and has injuries at this point. He likes to play physical. He can be an aggressive player. It's a lot harder to be a physical player if you're getting injured. And, you know, we saw that this is an extreme example, but, you know, Tyler Boucher is a top 10 pick that was injured throughout most of his draft season, plays a physical game, and much of his pro career, he is and junior career, he has faced additional injuries. And so I'm not saying there's no evidence to suggest that Caden Lindstrom is going to have a history of injuries, but you have two in one season that are different injuries that you're saying, ah, you know, like I'm a little bit nervous. So that's what the risk factor, that risk factor is what probably drops him, because I think the upside, everybody sees the upside. His ceiling is incredible. I mean, a player that skates like him, has the size, has the skill, that's a player that you want to develop. But I do think that there's reasonable concern because of the injury history. And then, you know, also, as Corey said, the missed time of evaluation where, you know, we're dealing with a different sample size, and that creates another layer of risk.
Corey, and players who get hurt get taken high. Like Brett Connolly went high, Morgan sure. Riley went high, Alex Galchenyuk went high. Teams will do their medical research. I'm not so the you know, the injuries aren't great. You got a back injury, it's never great. That dropped Vilardi a little bit in his draft year. But I think really for teams, it comes down to who is this player? Is Caden Lindstrom the guy we saw for most of his 16-year-old season, the U17 challenge, and into the Hlinka? Or is he this really impactful offensive player who's a premium athlete we saw from basically September through November, December? You know, who is the real player? Is there something in between there? I think that's the real debate on this player to go along with the medical questions.
Yeah, it feels like the specific injury is more important in these cases than that mm-hmm. they're injured, right? We talk about Catton too and a hip. I mean, he's a young guy. I have no doubt he's going to recover, but you're talking about a hip on a guy who is really shifty and quick, and you just wonder if it's 5% off. Like, that makes a difference.
Yeah, to my knowledge, he doesn't need surgery or something like that, so I'm not overly concerned about that at this point.
All right. Okay, so among the guys who are going to be there, there's a few names that I think we can point to and say this is a really big tournament for them. But Corey, you made the point as we were prepping that this is the first time we're going to see Aaron Kivaharju in several months, and that makes this a really massive event for him in particular.
Yeah, he got injured in the fall. I think I forgot whether it was September or October. He got hurt. And then they said he'll be back in February. And then they said he'll be back in March. And then they said he'll be back for April. And I think his actual return is going to be just for the start of this tournament, his third U18 World Championship, which is pretty rare for a player to play in three of these tournaments. And I think he also played at Hlinka. So fair to say he's gotten his fair share of U18 international hockey. And I think so. For those reasons, even though this is going to be his first hockey in quite some time, I think the bar is really high for Kivaharju. As a 5'9"-ish defenseman who's not an elite skater, I think, you know, for him to maintain his first round status, I think he needs to go into that tournament and go absolutely bonkers on the opposition. Because if he's just like good, pretty good, not amazing, I think, you know, from what my understanding of where he's being valued right now in the league, I think he could drop quite substantially.
How about Helenius for Finland? I mean, that's a guy who I think has had one of the better years, Konsta Helenius. This is among draft eligible players in Liga in some time. Do we expect to see him at this event?
I don't know. I mean, Finland is hosting the tournaments. I'm sure they would love to get him. Yeah. I think you saw how they did. That team did okay at the Five Nations with a watered-down roster. They add Kivaharju, they add Emil Hemme, they add VT Vasen, and then they add Helenius to their group. I think they could have a real chance to win the tournament. the issue with Hellenius is he was so good in Liga, and he was really good in the Liga playoffs for Ucarit, that now he's with the senior team playing in exhibition games. I think he got like 3 points in two games with the senior team the other weekend. And I don't know from my understanding if he's even going to be available to the U18 team. I think there's a real chance he's going to be at the World Championships. I think this World Championships, because of the looming best on best with the NHL players, I think it's going to have a lot more NHL players at that tournament. So for young players like Consta or like Aziz Boyum or whatever, we'll kind of see whether there's actually enough room on the roster for them when the NHL players are getting released. But at the moment, I think it's up in the air whether he's going to be available for the 18s.
Chris, one player we've talked about all cycle long is Cole Iserman, and seems like he's going to be one of the more divisive players in this class as we inch toward the draft. What does he have on the line at this tournament?
You know, I think everything, really. I mean, he's probably been one of the most picked apart players of this entire draft class, as you said, and really on top of that, you know, he is chasing down a record. So, you know, he's chasing down Cole Caulfield's career goals record. I believe he's 8 away from that, from tying it right now. So, you know, with the fact that he scored at such a high level in last year's tournament, scoring 9 goals during the World Under 18s and almost had 10, but it happened to hit Carey Terrance on the way in, and that was a big goal. But, you know, I think for him, it's about reestablishing some dominance. Some of the international tournaments that he's played in this year, he's been okay. Hasn't been amazing. He was better in the February Five Nations, and you know, he's done some things to improve his stock and different things like that. But to me, it's about reestablishing, hey, I'm an elite scorer. I can do more. You know, I can do more than score goals. I'm going to be able to, you know, he's not a huge play driver. We'll see exactly, you know, if it's him and Hagens. I mean, Hagens is going to drive that a little bit more, but you know, I just think that for him, it's about just continuing to, you know, be that elite scorer, being that go-to scorer, because that is a valuable trait. It's not like it's in, you know, like if that's your one dimension, and I don't think he's like wholly one dimensional, but if that's your best dimension, I mean, that's a great dimension to have. So, yeah, I think for us, we want to see Cole Iserman be a dominant player and leave a good last impression, because I think at various points this season, you're like, okay, I've seen it. And every time I see it, I see the same thing. I think we want to see, you know, outright dominance and certainly maybe a few other elements to his game.
Corey, who else are you watching at this tournament? Anyone that really jumped to mind when I asked for players that have the most to prove?
Well, one player who I think will be really interesting to watch is a player who's not 100% available yet, although I expect will be available, and that will be Tiji Ginla from the Kelowna Rockets. They're currently playing Prince George right now in the WHL playoffs. Ginla had an incredible first round there against Wenatchee, where I think he only had like 8 goals or something in that first round. I even though I think, you know, Kelowna's a good team and has some really good players, I expect Prince George to make quick work of them and for Ginla to likely be available for the 18 Worlds. And I was really, really looking forward to potentially, you know, because there's all this debate going on in scout circles on Ginla versus Catton versus Lindstrom, who is the top forward in the West. I would have loved to have had a measuring stick to compare the three of them against each other. We won't get that measuring stick now, but we might get to see a Ginla at the 18 level. We saw Catton and Lindstrom in the summer. We haven't seen a Ginla at the international level. And seeing how he would do as a potential featured player on Team Canada, I think would be really fascinating for a guy who seems to be rising up the list at the moment.
How about Linus Eriksson? I know that's a prospect who's maybe a little lower down the board, but seems like an interesting one of late.
Yeah, I think he's been a guy who's been rising for sure. He's played, I don't think he like really lit it up at the junior level in the first half of the year, but he's played quite well in the second half of the season versus men in the Allsvenskan, helping your garden make a deep playoff run, playing a notable role on that team. Good, you know, good skater, good skill, makes a lot of plays, can, you know, has a chance to be, you know, maybe a middle six center in the NHL one day. I think this is a guy who on a Swedish age group where we've kind of been wondering like, hey, like, is there anybody here who's really standing out? I don't think like he's standing out in a massive way. He's gonna be like a top 20 pick or something like that. But I think he's a good player. And I think this is a guy who is someone to watch going into the tournament for Sweden.
All right, just to close today, guys, I want to get your thoughts on the Calder Trophy race. And by this point in the year, I think we have narrowed it down probably to two real favorites. And Corey, that would obviously be Brock Faber, Minnesota, Connor Bedard in Chicago. I don't know if you're voting this year, but do you have a real strong thought? Okay, perfect, because then you can give us your full unvarnished opinion here. How would you vote on this this Calder Trophy this year?
Well, I feel like every year when we do this, I kind of focus in on what they actually ask us to do. It's not the most valuable rookie. It's the most proficient rookie, correct? Like, it's the guy who you look at and say, this is the guy who looked like he was the best player when he was on the ice. And I think that creates some difficulties for me, because I think on a per-game basis, I would prefer how Bedard looked to how Faber looked. Not to say that Faber didn't have a great year playing a massive role for Minnesota, but for me, the stuff that Bedard was able to do on the ice is what you expected. He has special skill, offensive instincts. He plays with pace. He can score from range. There's just a lot there that, for me, you know, if he had done it in 20 or 30 games, it wouldn't have been as much of a selling point. But for me, like, I expect Faber and what he can do because of skating, his compete, the offense he showed this year was way better than I thought. He looks like a real premium defenseman in the league for a long time. But, you know, Bedard to me showed to me he was a more special player this year. And he did it over a long enough period of time to where that would be my lean if I had a vote. But I don't. So, Minnesota fans, don't get angry at me. I have no real sway on what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you too, Corey. I do have a vote. So this will be fun. But you know, I think the other thing, one thing to note, you know, Connor Bedard did suffer the injury. When you look at a points per game basis, you know, top 12 season all time in terms of points per game for a U19 player in the NHL. You know, a lot of the guys ahead of him, you know, are superstars. Obviously, you got guys like Connor Bedard or Connor McDavid and Crosby that average better than a point per game, but it just doesn't happen very often when you have a guy that averages over 0.9 points per game. And I think Bedard, that's clear. But, you know, to me, if I'm looking at between the two players, I think age is always a factor when I vote as well. You know, I look at, it takes a little bit more for a player to separate himself. But that said, I think that Brock Faber, to me, you know, he's a star defenseman. I mean, I think he's got to be on the Olympic radar. Again, he's already played in one Olympics. I think that you have to throw him in there in that mix with the group that they have for Team USA, which is crazy to think about at after one season. Between those two players, though, I give the slight lean to Bedard, but I think that the case for Faber is more than valid. I think it'll be a tighter vote as a result, but really excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, and I get the point per game kind of tells us a little bit about the level of dominance here, but we still got to vote on the games that happened and what actually took place this season. The one thing I'll say in Faber's favor is that it did start to create a little bit of separation late. Yeah, I know, I heard the same thing. But for a lot of this year, Faber was within 5 to 10 points of Connor Bedard while being a shutdown defenseman. That really stands out to me. I don't know if he's going to win this award. I haven't decided how I'm voting yet, but I do think Faber has a real legit case here, and it's going to be a really interesting finish. Other names to watch on the ballot, guys, just real quick, we'll touch Logan Cooley, Luke Hughes, anyone else that you feel like really belongs on a ballot this year.
I didn't think you were going to ask us about the other rookies, Max. There are other rookies? No, I think the guys that you pointed out are absolutely in consideration. You know, I think the way that things kind of shook out this year, it just feels like it's been a two-horse race for so long. Yeah. I still have to think a little bit more about where the rest of my ballot's going to go.
Marco before Rossi, I turn it on Friday. Would be another.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's a lot of good options of guys, but I mean, I just think that the two-horse race that this has been for so long kind of makes it, I'll have to think about where 3 to 5 go on my ballot.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for us, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show Prospect Series. You can catch more of Chris, as always, over at Flow Hockey and on his podcast, Talking Hockey Sense. The Shawns, Gentili and McIndoe, have the next The Athletic Hockey Show. That'll be Wednesday with Frank, the secret Sean Corrado. We'll talk to you soon.